Hello and welcome to Empowered, the empowerment podcast where I, Imogen Barnes, embrace the power of the human spirit, storytelling, and the unity that comes from lived experiences. Tune in to be informed, inspired, and above all, hope instilled. Hello everybody and welcome back to Empowered. I am so excited to bring you this week's episode. We have a Christmas special this week and for the first time ever we have a returning guest. So today joining me is Sophie Smith. She is a peer worker, social worker and coach extraordinaire with a wealth of knowledge when it comes to eating disorders because she works professionally now in the space but also because she has lived experience. So today, her and I dive into all of the common themes that arise when you have an eating disorder at Christmas time, and we hope that we've provided you with a bit of a resource and some strategies to cope with anxiety, discomfort, anything that might come up around this time of year. So yeah, listen in. I hope you have the most merry Christmas. I hope you have a beautiful new year, and just know that I'm sending virtual hugs, that I know that this time of year can be hard, so I'm with you, and thank you so much for existing and thank you for tuning in today. So, welcome, Sophie. You are officially the first second guest that I've had on Empowered, and it is such an honor to have you here today. Thank you for being here.
Oh, thanks for inviting me back. I didn't know I was the first one back. So that's such a privilege for me. So thank you.
Oh, the honor is all mine. You are phenomenal. And Merry Christmas. Merry early Christmas.
Oh, Merry Christmas to you too.
Thank you. Do you have any plans? Are you going to do anything exciting?
We have quite, because my family's British, so we have quite a few like very traditional things that we do. So like just like a traditional kind of lunch on Christmas Day with like all the trimmings and Christmas pudding that we actually douse with brandy and light on fire, which is always fun. What else do we do? Oh, we always watch Love Actually on Christmas Eve, so that'll be fun. I think I pretty much memorized like every dialogue line by now. And yeah, I think we might go for it. It's quite hot here in Perth, so we'll probably be swimming in like the pool quite a lot, just chilling, reading books, everything like that, yeah.
Oh, that sounds so wholesome. We actually watched Love Actually in my household last night, and we were all laughing. Yeah,
so
laughing
good.
Keira Knightley, we always like, in person, I'm like, I look quite pretty.
Oh my god, yeah, so funny.
Oh, it's fantastic. Also, I'm really curious, what does a British Christmas lunch look like?
Well, it's pretty much just like, so my mum's vegetarian, so she'll probably not just have the turkey, so we'll have like the turkey and we'll have we always do like the sausages wrapped in bacon. I think they call it pigs in blankets like in other countries, and we'll have like cranberry sauce and we'll have like all the roast like potatoes and Brussels sprouts and everything like that, gravy, yeah, just kind of like a roast, and then we'll have like our Christmas pudding afterwards, which we have with brandy butter, which is like the best thing because it's just like brandy butter and sugar and it tastes so good.
I am actually begging you, you have to put that on your story. I need to see it lit on fire. That is amazing. Okay.
I'll try and put it on my, yeah, sometimes it doesn't really last very long because like all the flames like just burn off all the alcohol really quickly. But yeah, if we can try and get like the flames to be visible, then for sure I'll put a little video or boomerang of it on my story.
I love that. I think that's fantastic. We have a lot of Christmas pudding, but none of which we light on fire. Oh my goodness.
I know. It's like a bit of a, I don't know, I guess it's a bit of like a safety risk, but also like we've always done it like since we were really young, so it doesn't seem, yeah, it doesn't seem dangerous to me.
No, honor that tradition, please.
Yeah, so good.
Okay, another little icebreaker. What's your favorite Christmas food?
Oh, that's such a good question. I think for me, it's probably a tie between mince pies. I actually have one right here because I'm low-key kind of hungry, so I might just have to eat that while we're
Oh,
recording.
please. Oh, yes.
Probably just, yeah, mince pies and Christmas pudding, honestly, like I think my mum's been making the same Christmas pudding recipe since I was like 2 years old. So it's like this really tattered old one from like Good Housekeeping 2000 or something. So yeah, Christmas pudding and mince pies. I think this like the kind of yeah, the rarity of them in a way. Like we only have them this time of year, so it makes kind of them extra special. And I just love the taste. Like I love dried fruit and stuff. So yeah. What about
Oh,
you? What's your
that's
fave?
beautiful. Well, I'm definitely a mince pie person as well. And I only
Ooh.
discovered that in adulthood because we actually didn't have them when I was ki a kid. So I only
Really?
discovered them recently. It's like my whole world has opened up.
Wow.
I know, but my favorite, so my mom actually, and it's not necessarily a Christmas food traditionally, but she makes Rocky Road this time of year every year, and she has since we were kids. And she doesn't do it at any other point in the year. So that's my favorite. It's kind of like you said, the novelty, because you only have it that one time of year. And it just tastes like Christmas. And it's got so many memories wrapped up in it. And it's
Wow, I feel
fantastic.
like is Rocky Road kind of an Australian thing? Because I feel like when I grew up in England, we didn't really do Rocky Road. Like it wasn't really a thing. Like, is it kind of an Australian thing?
I definitely feel like it's a bake sale thing in Australia, like a little like nanny, like a nanny recipe.
Yeah.
Amazing. It's delicious. My mom does like white chocolate and dark chocolate varieties, and I've had like six pieces
Ooh.
today. So
Oh,
it's amazing.
so
It's one of a
good.
kind.
That sounds so good. What kind of lollies does she put lollies in it or?
Yeah, so she puts this all sorts of different things. This year we have shortbread, we have nougat, we have Turkish delight, we have lolly snakes, Maltesers, marshmallows.
Wow.
Yeah, it's like she goes all out, and it's literally the best thing you ever eat.
Sounds so good.
Fantastic. Now, what is your favorite Christmas tradition?
Christmas tradition. Ooh, I think for me it's probably we do Christmas bags instead of Christmas stockings. So instead of having like the stockings that you put, above the fireplace, we just have these big Christmas bags that we've had since we were really young, kind of like a really big gift bag, if you can imagine. And we each of the three of my siblings, we all have one. And it used to be that when we were young, we'd go to bed and like, overnight Santa would come and or Father Christmas in our case would come and like, fill them. And then we'd go into our parents' room in the morning and we'll sit on their bed and like unwrap all our presents like in our bags. And now it's a bit funny because we're adults and we usually go to bed later than our parents. So they'll just give the bags to us kind of pre-filled and we'll just like put them at the end of our bed because, it's kind of impractical for them to kind of come into our rooms now. But yeah, I think that's probably my favorite tradition. I just remember the excitement, like as a young kid, like you'd go to bed with the bag being empty and then suddenly it would be full in the morning. And it was just like, just so, yeah, so exciting, so much anticipation. So yeah, what about you?
Oh my goodness, I have such a similar experience. We also have like big sacks that have our names on them that my mom made for us when she was pregnant with us all. So
Oh, wow.
yeah, we've also had them our whole childhood. And very similar to you, we actually laid them out on just on our living room floor as kids. And I think that was more so because like similar to you, mom and dad knew that we were probably lying awake and that sneaking in the bag. I think my sister and I stayed up so late that they were like, oh, he might actually ruin the whole Christmas secret if we show up in their rooms. So it was always in the lounge rooms. But yeah, just walking out and seeing them. And then just Christmas morning in general, we usually have waking up like as a kid at the literal crack of dawn. You know, my mom and dad would actually have to say to us, 5 a.m. is the earliest you can wake us up. We don't want to be woken up
5
before then.
a.m. still really
I know.
early,
I know.
like
Hat tip to my parents
wow.
for dealing with that. But yeah, just opening gifts with each other. We usually have a nice breakfast with one another. We usually see extended family as well. So the whole day is just very wholesome, and it's so beautiful. And then even Boxing Day is quite nice as well. We usually just go to the beach or something on Boxing Day. So I definitely just love this time of year.
Oh yeah, same. It's so great. Like it's I feel like everyone just generally, you know, it's not always a nice time for everyone, but like in my family, everyone's usually like feeling good and, you know, like the gift giving. I think as an adult, I've increasingly preferred giving gifts to other people than receiving them or just like enjoying them as much. Just like seeing people unwrap stuff that you've got for them is so, I don't know, always just like, yeah, so wholesome.
Oh, I'm exactly the same. And as an adult, I really put a lot of intention and thought into the gifts that I buy people. And I don't buy many, but I do enjoy. I really love watching people open them. And sometimes they're a bit funny, or sometimes they're like something someone said in a, you know, just a passing comment. And I've just kind of like hung onto it. So I love that side as well. And I think that's something that I didn't capture as much as a kid. So I'm glad I have that now.
Yeah, no, I agree. Yeah.
Now, like you said, Christmas is beautiful. The holidays are fantastic. It's wholesome. It's nostalgic. But if you have an eating disorder, it can also be really, really, it can be quite traumatic. It can be anxiety provoking. And unfortunately, you know, a lot of our support systems, your professional ones, I mean, they sort of fall away at Christmas time, right? Because people go on holidays and that's very understandable, but eating disorders don't go on holiday. And so I thought we could create a resource today that people could tune into and feel heard in their experience and have, you know, just some coping strategies, perhaps a little bit of advice from our experience and just little like a virtual hug to their ears from us.
Yeah, that sounds there. That sounds good.
That sounds lovely. I put out a little sticker to my followers on Instagram. And I just asked them, you know, what are the sort of things that come up for you at Christmas time? What sort of do you struggle with? And a lot of the themes were really consistent. So I don't know about you, but there was a lot that I was very familiar with. And I was like, I definitely relate to that. I think that'd be fantastic to talk about. The top one, the very most popular question people asked was how to deal with food guilt around Christmas time. Do you have anything to share about that?
Yeah, I think that's such a common one. And I think one of the main things is kind of trying to remember that Christmas Day in particular is only one day. So even if it's one day where you're eating differently to, you know, to what you'd usually be eating, that one day or one meal is not going to change your health, your weight drastically at all, you know. And I think when you're in an eating disorder, it feels like any little, you know, little change outside of your very carefully curated, you know, diet or what you're kind of doing feels like it's going to make such a big difference, you know. It feels so overwhelming. But I think keeping in the back of your mind that this is not going to make a difference in the long run, really. And I think that's just, yeah, so important to keep in the back of your mind when you're perhaps, yeah, struggling with some of that guilt. And I think another one that sometimes I use with my clients is sort of trying to, I guess, think about Christmas in terms of, you know, what is it about that's not about food as well? So, you know, food, unfortunately, is quite a big part of Christmas for people, but you know, it doesn't have to be your sole kind of focus during this time. So I think, you know, even if you were to do a little brainstorm and think about, you know, what else does this holiday season involve? It might be the, you know, the giving and receiving of gifts and kind of the process of wrapping them and all the love and thought that goes into that. It could be, you know, the Christmas movies that you might, you know, traditionally watch, or, you know, the new ones that come out that you might, you know, watch. I don't know about you, but I love watching all the new Netflix trashy, you know, Christmas rom-coms. It's so fun. So yeah, and I think, you know, Christmas music, maybe you have traditions around Christmas that don't involve food. Like I know we have quite a few of those, you know, the decorations, the, you know, maybe going to the beach if you live in a warm country. And so I think it's, you know, trying to also think about, you know, this isn't just a holiday that's about food, and trying to kind of just broaden your perspective about, you know, trying to focus on maybe some of the other things that you enjoy to kind of remove that real fixation on the food piece. Yeah.
Oh, I think that is just priceless advice. I think you're so right. There is so much to the holiday, and you know, the reality is not everybody is going to be a place in their recovery where the day and the food and everything is the best thing that's ever happened. And I feel like sometimes taking the pressure off means letting yourself, you know, really enjoy the moments that occur outside of meal times, really letting yourself, giving yourself permission to enjoy those things, and knowing that you can, you know, absolutely try your best when it comes to meals, but know that if you do struggle, that there's more to the day than that, and you deserve to be at peace beyond the plate as well. You know, I think that's something that really I struggled with. You know, I thought that if I didn't do well at a meal, then the whole day was ruined. And I just tried to remember that, like, take each moment as it is. And, you know, even if you do slip up, it's not the end of the world. You know, you just still deserve to treat yourself compassionately. You still deserve to have a good time. And, you know, joy is actually possible for you to feel even when it doesn't feel like it in the moment.
Yeah, I think that's, yeah, that's so true. And I think another thing that really comes up around Christmas in terms of food guilt is, you know, often it's really normalized, and it is, you know, it's totally okay to also eat, you know, to a point where you are really physically full. And I think a lot of people with eating disorders really struggle with that, and that they've associated perhaps with weight gain. You know, if I'm full, then I've eaten too much, and therefore I'm going to, you know, gain weight. And so I think there's sort of two parts to that. Like, I think it's totally normal to, you know, at Christmas, a lot of people talk about, you know, kind of having like a food coma afterwards, you know, if you've had like a really big meal, and that is completely fine, you know, and that is quite a normal thing for people to, you know, to do, you know, to sort of, you know, quote unquote, indulge. I don't really like that word, but, you know, they'll really, you know, they'll let themselves kind of just eat, you know, and even if it's past sort of comfortable fullness, they'll allow themselves to do that. But I think also it's totally okay to not participate in that. Like, I know for me, it's much more comfortable just, you know, and it's nothing to do with the psychological side of, oh, I think I'm going to gain weight. But it's just, I know for myself that eating to a point where I feel, you know, sick or really full is just not, you know, it's just unenjoyable. So it's also, I think, giving yourself permission to not necessarily go to that, you know, extreme of fullness if you don't want to. And sometimes it's actually a nicer experience if, you know, you're full and you're satisfied, but you're not like overly stuffed, especially if that's going to cause you more distress in terms of feeling like, you know, you're bloated, or you just feel really bad in your body, or you feel like then you're going to put on a lot of weight. So I think, you know, it's also, yeah, just kind of knowing yourself and knowing that, you know, whilst everyone might be doing that, I think sometimes also that, that pressure to kind of eat, you know, till you're so full and uncomfortable, can feel, yeah, really scary as well. But I think just giving yourself permission to stop whenever you want to is really important.
Oh, absolutely. And something that has really sat with me in my personal healing journey is that guilt is temporary and regret is very much permanent. And when I can look back upon the Christmases that I spent completely in my eating disorder, at the time there was a lot of guilt. There was a lot of anxiety for me. There was a lot of sitting back and just not participating in a lot of things because I had that anxiety and I had that guilt that just ate me alive afterwards. And now looking back, I don't actually remember the food that I avoided. I don't remember what I weighed the day of Christmas. I don't remember what I wore. I don't remember the size of my body. But I remember the fact that I didn't participate, and I remember, well, I hold now a deep regret for having done that and missed out on so much fun and so much joy and so much happiness for, you know, to avoid a feeling that's actually very transient. It's awful. It's bloody horrific. Like, I'm going to be completely honest, but it does pass. And I think now I'm heading into this Christmas with the acknowledgement that sometimes, yeah, I'm going to feel a little bit shitty. And if you piss an eating disorder off, you feel a bit shitty. Like, like that doesn't even begin to cover it. You feel horrific. But I'd rather feel horrific and know that I'm living in alignment with my values than feel horrific after the thought for knowing that I missed out on what I would have loved to participate in.
Yeah, that's such a powerful little phrase, the whole, you know, guilt is temporary but regret is more permanent. And I think I'm similar to you, you know, when I was in my eating disorder, I it's mostly just regrets that I have about not participating in things, and that I, you know, still hold to this day. It's not, you know, the guilt that I might have felt if I did participate, you know, whilst it seemed you know, too much to cope with at the time. It would have been temporary, and you know, the kind of the missing out on stuff is what I really kind of regret now, you know, that I wasn't able to participate in certain things because of my eating disorder and because I had the rules around food or exercise or things like that. So I think, yeah, that's such a, yeah, that's, I'm going to use that actually with my clients, I think. That's such a little good nugget of advice. Yeah.
Oh, what a privilege. Thank you. Oh my goodness. I think something else that I like to keep in mind is that I'd love to honor my 5-year-old self and also my 90-year-old self. And I know that the things that my 5-year-old self and my 90-year-old self both value are things that my here and now self can kind of forget and lose touch with. And I think when I was 5, you know, I had a deep appreciation for joy. I had a deep appreciation for, you know, little glimpses of happiness and playfulness and just connecting with that. Just like I was very in touch with my here and now, which I think a lot of 5-year-olds are. I think that's just how 5-year-olds are. And I think my 90-year-old self, you know, if I get to that age, I know that I'm going to be thinking, what sort of connections did I have? What did I participate in? You know, what adventures did I have? I'm not going to be thinking, what size was my body? You know, did I turn down pasta salad? Like, that's not going to be something that goes through my head. And although it feels a bit ick in the moment, I know doing the things that feel ick is the right way out. You know what I mean? Feeling discomfort now sort of makes for comfort in the long term.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's so true. I think sometimes actually doing the stuff that feels, you know, kind of anxiety inducing or uncomfortable in recovery actually is a signal that you're doing the right thing, or that you're making progress. Because, you know, if it felt super comfortable and easy all the time, then you're probably in your comfort zone and therefore not really in that kind of space of growth and making progress. So I think, yeah, that's really true.
Yeah, thank you. I also wondered, I think a lot of people who experience, you know, binging behaviors or binge purging behaviors, you know, that sort of like compensate or restrict and then binge cycle, this time of year can be really tricky, especially because, you know, you might have food in the house that you don't usually have. It can feel very novel. It can also feel really scary. Do you have any advice for people, you know, living day to day with that sort of thing at the moment?
I think that's really tricky, because I think a lot of people have that belief that, you know, having food around is what is going to cause them to kind of binge on that food. I think, you know, a lot of the time we know that the binging usually comes from a place of restriction in the first place. And so by perhaps, you know, reinforcing that restriction by not having so much food in the house, you're then just probably feeding into that whole cycle. So I think a lot of the time what helps to undo that is actually to be able to sit with more of an abundance of food to kind of combat, I guess, that scarcity mentality that a lot of people have around food, about, you know, only allowing themselves so much, or, you know, only allowing themselves to eat a certain amount, or, you know, certain times of day. So I think for that side of things, it's almost, you know, I would advise people to try and not kind of, you know, like limit, or, you know, physically put food away in places where they can't access it, because that does tend to just reinforce that cycle. But perhaps, you know, it's having someone you can talk to if you're feeling those kind of binge urges. You know, I think it's really helpful to have kind of at least one kind of go-to person who might be able to help you, you know, kind of in that moment if you're struggling, you know, and you feel like you might just run to the pantry or the fridge and, you know, binge on all this food, to at least, you know, not, I guess, kind of prohibit you from accessing food, you know. And I guess especially if you have a lot of family members around, that would impact other people if you sort of chucked away all leftovers, or, you know, put things out of reach, or froze them or whatever. And I think it's more, yeah, probably just having someone that you can go to who might be able to help you work through, or at least just talk through, you know, maybe what you're feeling or what you're thinking, and then that might help dissipate the urge rather than kind of playing into, you know, into the kind of restriction that's feeding that binging by just sort of getting rid of all the food, if that makes sense.
Oh, absolutely. And I think you're so right. I think we so often, when we think about the binge restrict cycle, we think that the binging, you know, is the issue. We demonize the binging, we demonize the food. But in reality, you know, a lot of that binging, you know, that sort of behavior doesn't exist. It can, but it often doesn't exist outside of there being restriction somewhere. Mm-hmm. And so little things, like things that I know help me, is getting up and making sure that from the start of the day, you know, I'm eating adequately. Get up and have breakfast. And, you know, you're allowed to have breakfast no matter if you're going out for lunch. You're allowed to have, you know, consistent and adequate nutrition. And in fact, we think that, you know, someone, you know, if you have binged, I think the intrusive thought there is I have to compensate to make up for that. And it's that compensation that unfortunately reinforces the cycle. And often it increases the likelihood of you binging again. So if you have binged, you know, sit with that. You know, it's okay. We have slip ups. You're human. You are still allowed to hold compassion for yourself. You know, get up the next day and eat regularly and adequately. You deserve to do that. You know, you deserve that care. You don't deserve to deprive yourself to compensate. And in fact, you actually have a stronger chance at being able to get through the next few days without that cycle repeating itself if you're able to just treat yourself with compassion, eat regularly, try not to compensate.
Yeah, I think that's so true. I think, you know, unfortunately, it is also quite normalized that, you know, say, you know, even amongst your family members, that people might, you know, skip breakfast on Christmas morning because they know that they're having, say, a big Christmas lunch, and that only, you know, when you've grown up maybe around that, it seems really normal and okay to kind of, you know, quote unquote, save up your calories. You know, it's a very common kind of mindset, I guess, around this time. But I think for people in recovery, it's so, so important that you try and, you know, stick with what you know is going to be the right kind of choice for you and your recovery. And that we know is just, you know, not restricting and not skipping meals. So making sure that you know, you do still have something in the morning, and maybe even more, you know, a mid-morning snack if you're hungry, you know, never, you know, deprive yourself if you're hungry. But I think, yeah, it's just going to be leading you up to maybe being extremely hungry at Christmas lunch, and maybe, you know, overdoing it, or, you know, eating a bit more fast or mindlessly than you'd like to if you kind of do that, you know, restricting beforehand. So I think, yeah, really trying to keep in the back of your mind that the best way that you can prevent binging and that you can stay on, you know, the right kind of track with recovery over this time is just to keep eating, like you said, regularly and adequately, and try and not, I guess, be influenced by people around you. And think of it, yeah, sort of, you know, think of it as almost like a prescription you have or something, you know, that you need to eat. You know, you wouldn't stop taking your medication, you know, over this time. It's just something that you know that you need to do if that is something that you do, you know. So I think it's almost just being really firm with yourself in a compassionate way that this is what you need to do to stay on the right track. And you're really giving yourself that love and that care if you can go through with, you know, kind of just that adequate and regular eating, you know. And we know that is really one of the best ways to prevent binging and stay on track. So yeah, that's so important.
Absolutely. And like you said, oh my goodness, even if you don't have, you know, your loved ones don't have eating disorders, that doesn't mean a lot of them aren't influenced heavily by diet culture. And it just seems like the holidays tend to be a time where diet culture discussions are just everywhere. And it seems like there's so many passing of comments, you know, like running off Christmas lunch, you know, seemingly like insignificant comments to people that don't have that tumultuous relationship with food. But things like that can be so difficult to hear and to be subjected to when you've got enough of that internal dialogue going yourself. And I think what you said was just perfect. You know, it's remembering that you're on your own path, and that for me, it was reminding myself that other people might be able to engage in eating disorder behaviors and that not be an eating disorder for them. But for me, that ends up, you know, manifesting itself into this life consuming mental illness that rids me of the will to live. So I just have to remind myself constantly, yeah, okay, maybe that person can shrug off and engage in a behavior like that. I can't. And they might not, Yeah, like diet culture is so normalized now. It's not even, they're not even seen as eating disorder behaviors, but I suppose that's what they are in essence when people engage in, you know, heavily in diet culture.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Yeah, right? So it's just like really trying to remind myself, you know, health is relative to my context. I don't care what Aunt Margaret is saying about the health of chocolate for me if it challenges my eating disorder. And if I enjoy it and if I feel like it, you know, it's bloody healthy and I'm going to have it. You know, it's so difficult. I kind of had to like put blinkers on and just be like, I'm on my own path. I'm on my own path. Do what I value and try not to be influenced by others, which is easier said than done. But yeah, reminding myself that.
And I think it's almost like, I use this analogy sometimes with my clients, like I think in the process of recovery, you kind of go from being like more of a sponge to other people's influence and comments, you know, where you really do just kind of take that on board and you're very vulnerable to other people discussing, you know, triggering things or things around diet culture, weight loss, health, you know, all that stuff. Whereas, you know, kind of through this process, we really have to build up our resilience to all that, because it's not like we recover into a world free of diet culture. Unfortunately, that's not the case. You know, if anything, diet culture is only, you know, increasingly or becoming, you know, more insidious, more sneaky. And so we really have to build up our resilience and our awareness, you know, through the recovery process. And I think it's more like becoming, you know, like you've got a little bubble around you, so stuff just kind of just bounces off, you know. You can hear stuff, but it doesn't really affect you. You don't really, doesn't change what you're doing. You know, someone might say, oh, you know, are you really going for seconds? And, you know, maybe before you would question that, you'd be like, oh, am I a bad person? Like, oh, this clearly is too much food, you know, and maybe you then wouldn't even have seconds. Whereas, you know, maybe once you're a bit further down the track, it would more be, yes, I am having seconds, you know, and just an internal kind of like, you know, get lost type mindset towards that person who said that to you, and just letting it kind of wash over you and going through with what you really want to do. So I think it's trying to maybe picture that in your head of being a bit more of a bubble, you know, at this time, and trying not to let other people's comments affect you, because like you said, you know, what's can be harmless for one person can be super dangerous and be a really, you know, slippery slope into disordered eating and eating disorders for another person. So you kind of have to have, I guess, a bit of a good for you, not for me kind of mindset, where you just kind of recognize that, yes, other people might be able to do other things and it not affect them, but, you know, having that awareness around, well, if I do that, that's probably not going to be a good idea, is I think really important, just to have that kind of, yeah, that confidence and to stay on the path that you know is right for you.
Another thing that I would love to talk about is navigating body image around this time, especially when there is that increased awareness of what we're eating, what we're doing, maybe we're swimming. I know personally in my experience, a lot of poor body image thoughts arose just when I'd eaten more, because that's the nature of eating disorders. They want you to connect the two things, even though they're quite distantly related, you know, and having one meal, like you said, or one day's worth of eating, or even a month's worth of eating isn't going to have a drastic influence on your body and like your body itself, but your body image itself can be quite dramatically, you know, hindered. So do you have anything that you like to take with you to support you in those moments?
I think almost having that kind of mindset that you were talking about before, about when you're 80 or 90 years old, and you know, say there's a photo that's taken of you at Christmas that, you know, you don't like the way you look in, you know, you think you look too big, or you just, yeah, you aren't really satisfied with your appearance. Like, imagine if you had, say, grandchildren, you know, hypothetically, and you were, you know, explaining to them who was in this photo and, you know, what was going on that Christmas. I'm sure they would not ask, you know, and what did you weigh, or, you know, what size was that dress you were wearing? You know, that's not the kind of conversation that they would have with you. You know, I don't know about you, but when I have, you know, had similar kind of nostalgic, you know, reminiscing of past, you know, experiences and stuff with my grandparents, that's never something I would imagine, you know, asking them. Like, I wouldn't cross my mind to ask about that. So I think it's really, you know, focusing on what's, again, going back to what's important about Christmas. And, you know, when, you know, 5-10 years down the track, you're not going to remember what you weighed on that day, you're going to remember more, you know, how you felt, what you did, who was around you, and yeah, what kinds of traditions or fun things you did. And so I think it's kind of trying to take the focus off your body. But I think more practically, like in terms of strategies, I think, you know, trying to probably limit your exposure to social media at this time as well, because that's probably going to be, you know, depending on the kind of accounts you follow, a lot of, you know, especially if you live in Australia, you know, there's a lot of, you know, beach visits, lots of, you know, people in swimwear, and, you know, that really can show off people's bodies. And so that can obviously invite or reinforce, you know, that comparison with other people. So I think sometimes, you know, it might be helpful to have a little more boundaries around, you know, Instagram and things like that at this time. Like, I know that's super difficult, and I'd be the first to admit that, you know, I try and have like a 2-hour limit on Instagram every day, but there's been, you know, there's been quite a few days where I have not been able to limit it to that amount of time. So I think, you know, it's being compassionate, but also just knowing that, you know, you're not trying to deprive yourself, you're trying to help yourself by removing some, you know, some just like overexposure to this kind of content around, you know, other people's bodies. And I think other things practically is just, you know, making sure you're wearing comfortable clothes, you know, also because this is summer, you know, like often, even just on a practical level from the heat, you know, like your hands and, you know, body can get a bit swollen, like that just happens. I know it's a bit gross to talk about, but it's true. So I think just making sure that you're staying, you know, kind of as comfortable as possible. I think also with a hot climate, often even just the sensation of being hot can make people feel really uncomfortable in their body, and can sometimes oddly make people feel larger, you know, if they're sort of hot and sweaty, like there's some sort of connotation they've created there. So I think, you know, even just on a real practical level, making sure that you're wearing, you know, you're not over, and I know it can be, you know, tempting to hide your body if you're not comfortable with it, with, you know, long baggy stuff, but I think, you know, if you want to try and be more comfortable on a temperature level, trying to dress more appropriately for the weather, and yeah, I think, you know, prioritizing comfort over, you know, what you look like is so important. You know, I think I've had past Christmases where I've worn, you know, some really swanky dress, and it's like actually been like super uncomfortable to wear. I remember one Christmas I wore a dress that was fully like sequined, and just my arms like rubbing against the fabric was a nightmare, I tell you. It was so uncomfortable. So I think, you know, even if you do want to dress up, like still keeping comfort in mind, because I think, you know, physical discomfort in your body only really amplifies that mental discomfort as well. So if you're already having a hard time with your body image, like mentally, then going on adding on an extra layer of feeling, you know, too hot or just physically uncomfortable, you know, clothes are too tight, they don't fit well, that's probably only going to amplify those feelings of discomfort. So I think, yeah, just being really practical and trying to stay comfortable, stay cool, you know, have a dip in the pool, the ocean, whatever you want to do, take a cold shower, you know, sit in the aircon for a bit, try to save energy maybe. But, you know, anything that you can do to try and make yourself feel comfortable and kind of take the emphasis off your body, I think is, yeah, really important at this time.
Absolutely. And I think one of the age old tips and trick, you know, like one of the old tricks in the book is just focusing on what you're experiencing, focusing on what you're doing, focusing on what this vessel is allowing you to engage in, you know, the hugs from your great grandma, maybe, you know, the ability to sit down and enjoy a meal, you know, it's hanging the stockings, making gingerbread, going for Christmas light drives if you're in Australia. That's something that we do in my family. You know, just trying to focus on what you're able to do. I think for me, that's something that really empowers me and something that gives me an appreciation for my body, even when I'm not, you know, completely positive about how it looks. Because that's realistic as well. We're not necessarily going to feel like amazing about ourselves and our reflection all of the time. And Christmas is not an exception to that. But like you said, yeah, having that, just being comfortable, you know, being cool if you can, or whatever, just being comfortable. Maybe if you're feeling like there's a certain outfit that if you put on, you're like, I kind of feel slay in this. Like, yeah, no, if that exists for you, then like, bring it on, you know, even if it's quote unquote too dressy or whatever, no, put that outfit on if that ignites your soul, you know, and try and just remember that you're worthy, that, like you said, the focus isn't how you look, it's what you're doing. And in 10 years time, in 2 years time, you know, 50 years time, you're not going to remember the experience that you had in your body, unless it is the difference between you enjoying yourself and having, you know, engaging in the holiday and doing all the things that bring you joy, or avoiding those things. That's the only time that your body experience will probably have that longer kind of the regret attached to it. I think not. Yeah, that's something that I would like to have wished I did now, back when I was going through mine. You know, I wish I didn't. I wish I still, you know, try to engage in things a little bit more than avoiding them altogether because of how I felt in my body, because, yeah, I just missed out a lot. So I wish I had sat with discomfort a little bit more instead of run away from it. And I'm not saying that that's something that everyone should do, but in my lived experience, that's something that I wish I had have done.
Yeah, and I think even, you know, even if there are things that you previously would not have engaged in at all because of, say, your body image, you might be able to kind of, you know, come to a bit of a middle ground or a compromise in terms of, you know, say going to the beach would be one example. So say, you know, because you don't want to be seen, say, in a bikini or in a swimming costume or bathers, you know, because you don't like how you look or you're really, you know, having a poor body image, you know, kind of day or time, then, you know, if you previously just fully avoided and wouldn't have gone to the beach at all, you know, and the, you know, the ideal would be, you know, you go and you're able to be in, you know, whatever kind of swimwear you want to wear and, you know, not care about what you look like, maybe you can at least have the compromise of, you know, going to the beach but just being in your normal clothes. So at least you're spending time with your family and you're there, and that's kind of one step, I guess, towards actually being able to maybe get your bathers on and go swimming with other people. But it might at least relieve some of that sense of I'm fully missing out on an occasion, you know, if you just stay home and, you know, sulk in your room because you can't go or you feel like you can't go. So I think sometimes, yeah, thinking of, is there just one little, you know, compromise I can come to this Christmas where, you know, I know I'm not there yet, I can't, you know, fully engage, but at least I can get kind of halfway there maybe. I think that might be a way to kind of also prevent some of that black and white thinking that we know so commonly people, you know, with eating disorders fall into, you know, I either can do something or I can't do something, you know, I can participate in this or I'm just not participating. But, you know, trying to sit in that kind of middle ground, that gray area, maybe I can just participate, you know, half of the time, or, you know, come to a compromise where I'm sort of, yeah, I'm participating a little bit, or, you know, in that kind of middle ground. So I think, yeah, that might be something that helps not only with, you know, with feeling like you're, you know, missing out, but also combating some of that real black and white thinking that is so important to try and work on in recovery as well.
Oh, absolutely. And to be quote unquote in recovery, you don't always have to feel like you're about to catch on fire with anxiety or with discomfort in general. Absolutely. Finding that middle ground and giving yourself that compassion too when things, you know, if you do sit out on an activity, hold compassion and hold space for yourself. You know, you did your best and that's okay. And actually stepping back and saying sometimes you're allowed to say no to something as well. You don't have to put the pressure on yourself to do anything that you, in the moment, you know, you might not actually feel able to do. That's actually okay as well. And that's also self-care. And as you know, like you said, it's there's no like black and white. It's not like, you know, participate in everything or don't bother. Oh, you're not in recovery if you don't do everything and you're not constantly being drilled at by your eating disorder. I think that's such a good point to make.
Yeah. And I think I love this. I've seen this going around kind of social media recently, but almost the point that, you know, on a day when you only have, say, 30% to give and you give 30%, you've actually given 100% of your capacity. So trying to also think about that, I guess, and to yeah, like not fall into that, like, oh, I participate in everything, or just like, screw it. And I just will sit at home and not participate in anything, you know, if you can just give, you know, what you have, your capacity to engage and stuff. And if that's 0% and you do just want to, you know, sit out on stuff and take time and rest and recharge and have time to yourself, that's also perfectly okay. You know, I think we sometimes are so hard on ourselves as, you know, these kind of people who get eating disorders is constantly having to be working on recovery. But sometimes it's okay to just fall into a bit more of a maintenance mode, you know, where you're just, you know, you're not not necessarily, yeah, 10 out of 10 anxiety all the time, feeling like, you know, everything's a challenge and you're facing fear foods and doing X, Y, Z, you know, sometimes it's okay just to, yeah, just to kind of take stock and have a bit of a time to rest. And, you know, recovery burnout is really real as well. So I think even this time, you know, sometimes for people, it's just about, yeah, kind of taking a step back and just going into that kind of maintenance mode, make sure you're not, you know, actively relapsing, but you don't have to be constantly, you know, setting such high expectations for yourself when it comes to recovery. You can just, you know, stay somewhere, you know, for a while if you feel like you need a bit of time to just kind of reflect and recharge. And then, you know, when you're ready to take that next step in recovery, you'll be ready. And that's kind of probably a better idea than to keep pushing forward and just burn out, you know, physically and emotionally, you know. So I think sometimes this time of year, it is kind of just, yeah, just being a little bit easing off the pressure on yourself and just being, you know, a little bit more self-compassionate. And if you don't make a lot of progress over this time in recovery, that's perfectly fine. You know, it is quite a high stress time for everyone. So I think, you know, just being on more of that kind of maintenance and rest mode can be really beneficial as well.
Oh, absolutely. And just holding space for yourself, holding care for yourself, treating yourself like you would a 3-year-old or like someone that you love. You wouldn't tell someone that you love to be in constant anxiety all the time. You wouldn't put the pressure on them to be pleasing their inner perfectionist or, you know, whatever, the people around them. You just say, hold, you know, it's give yourself a Christmas present and give yourself self-care, you know, like I think that that's such an invaluable thing, is to just be able to sit with yourself, you know, your flaws, although I don't love that. Don't love the word, but sitting with who you are, with what your reality is right now, and just being okay with that.
Yeah, I think that's so important. And I think, yeah, although I don't love that word flaws as well, I think, yeah, just acknowledging that no one's perfect, you know.
Yes.
And
yeah,
but perfection just doesn't exist, and who you are, and you know, is enough, just as you are as well.
Oh, that's so perfect. Thank you so much for being here, Sophie. Your knowledge is just, I just want to clone you. I just want to have little Sophies everywhere. I want everyone to be able to have a Sophie on their shoulder for Christmas. I think that's so amazing. I know everyone's going to get so much out of this conversation. Do you have any last words of wisdom for our listeners?
Ooh, that's a tricky one. I think just knowing that, you know, hopefully everyone already knows that, you know, full recovery from an eating disorder is possible for everyone. And I truly believe that, you know, not everyone's necessarily going to get there. But I think, you know, if you have that in mind, you know, knowing that it is possible for you, that always, you know, can really help you hold on to that hope at this time of year. And I think, yeah, just knowing that, you know, there are people like me out there who understand and who can relate to your experiences at this time, and you know, we've been there, and you know, we're holding so much compassion for everyone in recovery this, you know, this Christmas and all round, really, all year round. But I think, yeah, we know that this time of year can be particularly difficult to navigate, and we also know that it gets better, you know. Like, I used to find Christmas such a tricky time of the year, and I remember it, you know, like actively dreading it, you know, and now I just love it and I look forward to it as someone who has fully recovered. And I think it's almost, you know, that bit sweeter knowing that there were years when I really deprived myself and did not fully engage or fully do what I wanted to do because of my eating disorder, but now I can again, and I really don't take that for granted, because I know that it necessarily, you know, if I hadn't put in the work, that wouldn't necessarily have happened. So I think, yeah, just knowing that, you know, it gets better on the other side. But yeah, just really holding that compassion and care for yourself in the season, and know that all, you know, all of us in the recovery community and all the CCI coaches I know out there are definitely rooting for you and sending you lots of love and virtual hugs.
Oh, you're the best, Sophie. Thank you so, so much. I will link all of your social media in the show notes below so that everyone can come and get some of your fantastic content, your fantastic essence in their life. I've actually seen your Christmas posts and I'm so here for them. I know that they're so, so important and so special. So thank you so much. Thanks for existing, and your virtual hugs, I'm sure, will be felt by everyone listening.
Oh, thanks, Imogen. Thank you so much for inviting me on. And yeah, I always love, you know, love your content and love what you're doing out there. And you're such a, yeah, such a, I think, inspiration to so many people. So thank you for what you do. And yeah, thanks for chatting with me again.
Oh, likewise. Everything you said, oh, you're the best. Thank you so much, Sophie.